Welcome to Living Healthy Together. Each week we share patient stories, advice and insights from those closest to care, dive into health-related current events, and explore the local and national issues shaping healthcare across our region. I'm your host, Philip Rao, with University of Vermont Health.
I thought this entire 6 months was just going to be easy breezy, like, oh, I'll just have a lot of fun, hike a lot, find a job, which the beginning was really great, but it slowly turned into spiraling into what now, like, my family and friends call my crisis. Like, I was spiraling towards this crisis. So when I got home, I just started feeling like worse than I've ever felt. Just extreme panic attacks, anxiety. I felt so disconnected from myself. I just couldn't anchor on to anything. I just felt totally out of control.
More than 1 in 5 American adults experienced some form of mental illness last year, underscoring the importance not just of awareness, but accessible treatment and support services. This week on Living Healthy Together, we'll explore the impact of mental health urgent care, which aims to support individuals experiencing a mental health crisis. And you'll learn why experts and providers say you should consider visiting places like Howard Center's Mental Health Urgent Care Center at 1 South Prospect Street in Burlington, even if you're well. Gabby McAtura had recently moved to Vermont with her partner and left a high-stress job for what was supposed to be a brief period of reflection and transition. Instead, Gabby's anxiety went into overdrive, putting her through a series of escalating panic attacks that ultimately resulted in a trip to the emergency department. It wasn't until Gabby's mother, visiting from out of state, found Howard Center's Mental Health Urgent Care Center at 1 South Prospect Street in Burlington that Gabby knew she had found the path forward. Gabby, thanks for joining us today and sharing your story. You've been living in Vermont for about 2 years now with your partner, Andrew. How did this journey start for you?
I work on the fundraising team at the Intervale Center, which is a local nonprofit. I grew up out west in Colorado and New Mexico. I have a partner named Andrew who grew up out here in Vermont in Middlebury, and we have a dog named Maple. I've been living here for about 2 years now. I moved here for the first time in 2019 and decided the winters were just too intense. Dragged Andrew back to Colorado for a few years, and then we just decided Vermont is a really special place. So we ended up moving back here, and now this is our place. When we moved back to Vermont in 2023, I had a different job with a consulting company that actually ended up being too intense for me personally. We were on really big projects. I was working on the weekends. I was working until like 8 at night. It was just too much for me and it wasn't a good fit. So I ended up actually taking a little bit of time off to find a better fit. And when I left that consulting job, I was just like, I cannot go back into a job like this. I need to be really thoughtful about what I do next. And I had been bouncing around, not really spending more than 2 years anywhere. And I was just ready to work in person. I've been virtual for a really long time and then just end up somewhere where it just like felt really good, smooth and thoughtful transition. I'm going to take 6 months off because I'm not ready to just swing into another job. Because what if I just end up in the same spot and then another year I'm doing this again? So I wanted to take 6 months off and figure out what I wanted. I was feeling really burnt out and just like hike a lot, just relax. And the beginning of that 6 months, I thought this entire 6 months was just going to be easy breezy. Like, oh, I'll just have a lot of fun, hike a lot, find a job, which the beginning was really great. But it slowly turned into I was spending a lot of time alone, like in the woods, which I think was good to a point. But I ended up going on to hike the Camino in Spain. So it was solo. It was during like a pretty low part of the season and there weren't a lot of people there. So I ended up being in Spain, solo traveling for like 3 weeks by myself. Not a ton of English speakers on the trail at that time. And it started out really great, but towards the end, I think the anxiety stuff that I had, there was just nothing to cover it up anymore. It was literally just like me in the woods with my brain. There was no job to go back to. There just wasn't any of those things to grasp onto anymore.
Something that jumps out at me here is that your journey really intensified after you made this conscious decision to be thoughtful, take time, and figure out what you really wanted and what worked best for you in your work life. Most people probably hear that and think, great, she's doing exactly what she should be doing, good for her. In this case, it jump-started your anxiety and ultimately put you in crisis. How long have you been dealing with anxiety in your life?
I have had anxiety like forever. I remember having my first panic attack when I was like 11, and it swung back and forth. Sometimes it was pretty manageable. It was just part of who I was. And then sometimes it swung more into like, it's really hard to leave the house. It's hard to do normal things. It's hard to go to the back of a giant like grocery store or Target or something. But I had always been like very high functioning and I just stayed busy. I grew up playing soccer, so it was always like soccer in school. There was just lots of things keeping me busy and keeping me going along, which I now know is really helpful. I went to undergrad and then I went to graduate school and then I got into some really busy jobs. So I think I would have these like periods where I was really anxious, but then I would be busy with work and it would just kind of go away over a month or two. When I came home, I really started spiraling into what now like my family and friends call my crisis. Like I was spiraling towards this crisis. So when I got home, I just started feeling like worse than I've ever felt. Just like extreme panic attacks, anxiety. I felt so disconnected from myself. I just didn't feel like myself. I just couldn't anchor on to anything. So yeah, there's like anxiety, depression in there. And I just felt totally out of control. And one day I was home alone. My partner was like spending time with friends somewhere. And it was just after weeks of just being like, I cannot do this. It's just getting worse and worse and worse. And I had a therapist I was talking to. And I just had this terrible panic attack where I just felt totally out of control and I was scared about what I would do to myself because I just didn't know what to do. I just did not know where to turn. I just thought, oh my gosh, this is never going to end. So I called my therapist and said, what do I do? I feel like I need to be like admitted somewhere. I don't know where to go from here. And she said, I think you should go to the emergency room now, tonight. And they will help you there because she's in Vermont, but not close enough. So I had a friend come over and then when my partner came home. We went to the emergency room, not really knowing what would happen. And I was in such a bad state. They had me in a room where they were kind of guarding the room. And I hadn't been like that deep in a build. Like they really had to hype me up to get me back there.
So you sought professional mental health support. You sought medical advice, followed that medical advice, and you still were encountering a barrier to care in that the condition you're seeking help for is almost physically preventing you from getting the help that you need.
I remember the nurse being like, this is probably going to be like one of the worst nights of your life, but then hopefully it gets better. And I was like, oh, great. So I was just really agitated, didn't know what to do. And the psychiatrist that was on call that night or in the emergency room ended up being like, oh, I think you're going to be a really good candidate for medication, which I had never, ever taken before because I was really nervous about it. But that's pretty much where the emergency room visit ended. They decided that I wasn't really a danger to myself and that I was just having a really bad panic attack and that they were going to give me some meds and see if that helped. But then I was kind of thrown back out into the world. I was like, oh my God, what do I do now?
How did you make it from that moment of what now to going to Howard Center's mental health urgent care clinic?
So my mom ended up coming to Vermont and I think she was the one that found this mental health urgent care that opened 2 or 3 weeks before this happened. So if it happened earlier, it wouldn't have been there. And it ended up just being like my lifeline. I don't know if you've ever been in the emergency room. I was very well taken care of, but it's not really like a cozy place to be if you're having like a mental health crisis. But the mental health urgent care center has these like big windows. You can see the lake from there. It just felt so good. The moment I went in there, I actually started crying. And my mom was like, what is wrong? And I was like, oh, this just feels right. Like, this just feels like where I'm supposed to be right now. And everyone was just so welcoming, and I did an intake with the folks that were there, the mental health professionals on the mental health urgent care side. And then on my way out, they were like, oh yeah, like this is peer support. This is also a resource for you. And that's how I got to peer support. And I was like, oh, I think this is something I'll be returning to. But the first time that I was there, I was only there for like 5 minutes with my mom. And I was still in such like a weird mental state that we were just like, okay, let's go home. That's how I got there.
So that was your first glimpse of mental health urgent care. When did you go back, and how did life change for you after this feeling that you had found the right place to be?
It definitely evolved for me. So I, again, was in the privileged position that I didn't have to go back to work for a little bit. I was still in the process of searching. And when I was looking for, I just like paused it for a little bit. But at that point, like the day after we had gone into peer support for the first time, I was still in a place where I couldn't drive. I couldn't leave my house alone. I couldn't go on walks around my neighborhood. I just felt really like unsafe and uneasy with myself. So when I first started, we started treating peer support like it was my job. I'd pack up my little snacks, and my partner or my mom, she was out here for like a week, would drive me there. And I would just have some of the most uncomfortable days, but around people that just, like, my family and friends and my partner, like, love me so much and were trying to help me as much as they could. But they hadn't been through something specifically like this, and I don't think they were equipped to support me through it. And being in that peer support room, it really evolved to me being like in full on crisis and going in and just being like totally disconnected, not really like communicating with folks very much. And then slowly I started learning the stories of the peer support folks in particular that were in there that staffed it, hearing their stories, what they have been through, and being like, oh, you went through that and you are here now. And I saw some little glimmers of hope, and just hearing like how long it took them to get through what they've been through or what they're still struggling with. So slowly I went from being in crisis, not really interacting very much, to I'd sit there and just do puzzles for like hours with them while we chatted, to then we slowly started making a plan. So when I would come in, we decided that a specific method called cognitive behavioral therapy would work for me. They did not prescribe that. That's something I like came to on my own. And I said, hey, I have this workbook that my therapist has recommended. And they were like, great. Like, let's start having you like practice working through it in here. And again, they were just there for support. I was really like doing a self-guided process through this workbook. And I would practice having panic attacks in that room with them. And I'd be like, okay, I'm having a panic attack right now. And it got to the point where I wasn't avoiding those things anymore, because I had a space I could be in that was just comfortable with people who were there just to support me, whether I wanted to just sit and be in crisis or do puzzles or be like, will you look at this workbook with me? So it transitioned into something that was really like I had gotten out of the crisis stage and into fully communicating with these folks and practicing and learning from them. And then luckily, towards the end of my time, it got good enough that I was able to land a position at the Intervale Center. I was able to like turn it off for a little bit to go and do interviews, because it's something I really wanted to do. And then we just started practicing, like, what would it be like to go back into the work world? And they would celebrate small wins with me. Hey, my partner went to New York City this weekend and I stayed home alone. Or, hey, I drove to this place. They were everything I needed at every stage of that. I still was going just to have the regularity of it, literally up until the day I started my new job, just to have that welcoming space to go and have that as a cushion until I landed in my next spot. And I would still, if I went up there today, like I've gone by occasionally for holidays to drop off like little pumpkins or cookies or something, and you can just walk in. They're not like, okay, what are you here for? You can just walk in and you could sit there silently for an hour and just be like, this is what I need to do. And they'd be like, okay, great. Or you could be laughing. Someone brought in their guitar one day and was playing. You're like surrounded just by all these people going through these things. And it's just like a really special in-person place to be when I was going through this.
We're going to going to take a quick break here on Living Healthy Together. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation with Gabby about her experience at Howard Center's Mental Health Urgent Care Clinic in Burlington, the impact peer support services had on her wellness and recovery. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Living Healthy Together, where we're looking back 1 year after Howard Center's Mental Health Urgent Care Clinic launched in Burlington, digging into mental health needs and challenges in our region, and the center's work supporting people across the spectrum of mental health needs. We're back with Gabby McAtura, a former guest at the clinic who's sharing her story and experiences. Gabby, when we went to break, you were talking about having found the clinic and it being the place where it felt right for you to be. You also mentioned becoming aware of peer support and thinking that you'd be coming back to it. Let's go there now. What surprised you the most about peer support? Most of the time, I think people have preconceived notions about how you'll experience something or how a process will work. Did you go into this part of your journey with any of that baggage?
I think partially it got so bad for me because I wasn't telling anybody. I was only embarrassed of the state of my mental health. I was just like, oh my God, the next step is going and being admitted somewhere. And that seemed like just like the worst thing that could possibly happen. I think if you sought me out in the world, you may not know, like I'm a pretty high functioning person. And I was like, oh, this isn't for me. This is for people who are going through something much worse. And it's just not, it helps. It was helping people at all stages of crisis that they were going through or mental illness or anything that they were going through. I've talked to friends after this who have had friends or partners or themselves that are going through this. And I'm like, oh yeah, they have this mental health urgent care peer support center. And there is the notion of, oh, that's not for me. I'm not like crazy enough for that. And it's like, no, these people are there to help everybody in each stage of what they're going through. And it doesn't mean you're crazy or weird or wrong or anything. It's just you're struggling in this portion of your life and there's support and you're probably going to get through it better in the end if you seek out something like this. At least that's what it was in my case.
A really important part of peer support is this give and take, and not just drawing on their experiences to help others, but sharing your own struggles and vulnerability with others. What impact did hearing other people's stuff have on you?
Folks don't open up immediately, obviously, about what they've been through, but once you're in there every day, I got to hear each one of their individual stories. And I just think in this day and age, we are talking about mental health more, but not the nitty gritty, like scary thoughts that you have, the details of it. Just like, oh, I'm feeling anxious. Oh, I'm feeling depressed. We got down into the details of it. And that was actually really nice for us to be able to share that and for me to hear, like, wow, you've been through some really hard things and you're here helping people. That wasn't just the end of your story. And now you're not a functioning human anymore. You've been through something that I think is harder than what I've been going through. And it wasn't like a comparison ever, but I was like, oh, I just don't know if people recovered from something like that and went on to live like good, helpful lives, like supporting other people like me. So yeah, their stories, I have people in my life, like my partner is very mentally stable. And I think folks who love you can only support you to a certain point if they haven't been through something specific like this. It was just so helpful to have the support of my family and friends and partner, and then also go into this space where I could be like, this is this very specific thought I had yesterday. And they're like, oh yeah, like I've had that too before, or like a similar situation to that, and just be like, oh my God, okay, I am not the only one. And you had that thought before and like you, I like you and I think you're a great, strong person.
How long did you continue to return to peer support services at the Mental Health Urgent Care Clinic?
I think I was there between 2.5 and 3 months. I was in that position where I was in between jobs and I was treating it like my job. I would wake up and I would go. It was open, I believe, at that time from 9 to 5, and we would just have our days together. And I feel, again, like when I started my job in early January of 2024, I was like, I could come back here for lunch every day if I wanted to. If it starts getting, it's just nice to know that I feel like I have a lot of tools in place now. And I feel confident about my abilities that if a crisis like this occurred again, I have what I need to get out of it. And one of those tools in that toolbox is something like peer support, because I think not talking about it like made it worse for me. So that would be like one of my number one things if I started feeling like, I call it weird, but if I started feeling really weird again, like my brain just started feeling like really icky, they would be one of the first places I would go. And I would take a day off from work and just be like, okay, I just need to reset in this space again, talk to these folks. And you know what? They've probably had something similar happen. Like, oh, I had this, I thought I was doing well. And then a day just comes out of nowhere that's like really hard. So I would go back today if I needed to.
You've gone through a lot and put in a ton of work. What's next for you? Have you thought about going into peer support yourself?
I've already passed the year mark of when I ended up in the emergency room that day. So I've kind of celebrated a year of doing better. And when all of this was happening, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so bad. But now that I'm on the other side of it, my brain is just better than it was like ever before I even went into all of this. So now I'm just in a weird way, really grateful that all of that happened, because I think I needed something like that to propel me into living the kind of life that I want to. So next, I just want to get another year under my belt of just living a life where I don't have all of these boundaries in place of like, oh, I can't drive at night, or I can't go into the back of the store. I get anxious when I'm in these situations, and I'm just able to live and use my tools and know that like some days or weeks are going to be hard, but I have these things. So I think the next year is just kind of me continuing to practice that. That's a good question about peer support. I haven't really thought about going and doing it in a super formal way, but I've just been so much more open about this stuff now. So I think I'm doing it kind of in an informal way in my own life of like, as soon as I started opening up about these things and not just being like, I have anxiety, I went through this like really intense period of depression, and I actually get into the details of what happened, I feel like everybody has like, oh, I've gone through that, something like that, or my partner has. And if I just try to tell my experience, and if they ask for support, I just say, oh, this is personally what has helped for me, or this is what I've gone through. And I just live a lot more authentically now. So maybe I can just be peer support in my life by just being me.
What do you hope people take away from your story?
I think what ended up really making my situation worse now that I look back on it was I just wasn't really communicating about what was happening in my brain, partially because I didn't know what was happening, and partially because I was like, people are going to think I'm unwell. Someone passed by in peer support once and didn't actually come into peer support, but we heard them in the hallway saying, like, I'm in school, I'm studying to be a doctor, I don't belong here. And there was like a sense of like, I just don't belong here. I'm not supposed to be doing this. I'm a high functioning individual. And I just want people to walk away with like, mental health services, peer support aren't just for people that are on the extreme side of the spectrum. It's for anybody who thinks that they need support. I would hope that I had to arrive at peer support in kind of an extreme way, but I wish I knew about it earlier, because I think it could have helped if I was able to get over that barrier of, if I go here, people will think I'm weird. Or if I go here, then I'm actually unwell and I have to address that. Or I am going to be categorized into this like mentally ill bucket. That's not what happened. I left better than I have been like ever. So I think that's what I want people to leave with. It helps, and it doesn't say anything about you.
It's time for a break here on Living Healthy Together. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with more on mental health urgent care with Tim Durney and Audrey Davis from Howard Center's Mental Health Urgent Care Clinic right after this. Welcome back to Living Healthy Together. Before we jump back in, if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please consider following us. It helps more people find the show, and you'll get new episodes automatically. We're back with Tim Durney, Program Director at Howard Center's Mental Health Urgent Care Clinic, and Audrey Davis, the center's Clinical Supervisor. Thank you both for joining us today. Tim, you've worked in mental health support for more than a decade and been a part of Howard Center's Mental Health Urgent Care Clinic since its inception. What's the level of need in our region right now for these types of services, and how has that need evolved over the course of your career?
So we're a collaboration project, Howard Center, UVMMC, Pathways Vermont providing peer support, and CHC, Community Health Centers, providing nursing. So it's a nice collaboration of everybody that does well in their areas kind of put together. So this is something that was unique to anything I've done before. We've had the challenges. We've had different agencies on different EHRs and not having a communication system platform. But now, after we've ironed things out after a year, we're running like a well-oiled machine.
Audrey, Tim's got a ton of history in his back pocket. You bring an outside perspective. You joined Howard Center last August as the clinic's clinical supervisor. What have you learned about the challenges and resources that are unique to or of special impact or importance in Burlington and the surrounding area?
I originally come from the Midwest, so my career has been spent providing mental health services in Midwest regions. And so funding looks a lot different out there. When we knew we were moving to this area, I was excited to learn about the different programs that get funding and have support. And so when I learned about mental health urgent care and that it is a collaboration between these different agencies in the area, I was really excited about a way to kind of immerse myself in a new community. You know, I'm moving to a new place where I don't know how things work. So it felt like a great chance to be able to do that. And that really has been the truth. I feel like mental health urgent care, we get exposed to a lot of the different challenges in the community that people are facing, but also we get to experience and learn about all the various resources that we have available to us and that we can help refer guests to. So it's been really eye-opening what we're able to do, especially being in Burlington. Obviously, we are the biggest city in Vermont, so we have a lot of resources that come with that. But being able to see people who are coming from outside of Chittenden County and help them learn about and understand what's available to them where they live, but also what they could have access to here.
How big is the service area that you guys provide? And is that a challenge or is that something that's unique to this center?
Transportation in
rural Vermont, that challenge exists, that barrier exists. We've seen people from Northeast Kingdom. We've seen people from St. Albans. We've seen people down in the south further. I think the other part of that is that stigma is alive and well still. And some people maybe not want to seek services in their community. The other part of that is we're at the UHC building. So we're at One South Prospect. And there's a lot of other providers in this building. So just because you're parked out in the parking lot doesn't mean you're coming in and accessing mental health urgent care. So it can be kind of a great cover for people that maybe wouldn't normally seek traditional help.
It's a great point that you guys aren't just the final destination. You can be the first door to get someone elsewhere where they might need to go. What is mental health urgent care? How does that differ from mental health care, the way folks maybe normally think of it?
This is people come in with a self-defined crisis. Say, if it's a crisis to you, it's a crisis to us. You know, that rings true. I think everybody believes that. We try to keep wait times as short as possible. We have peers to even just share space with people if they don't feel comfortable being alone. We've created some really good relationships with, you know, because we're on campus. So we've seen a lot of students and created a lot of good connections with the college as well. But where we sit, the things that we've been doing and just the work of being a walk-in center and having anybody that is experiencing some kind of crisis, whether it's just a bad day or a loss, or, you know, it doesn't really matter. If you feel you need somebody to talk to, this is the place.
Right. And we're walk-in. Anybody can come in when they need to, for whatever reason. We say it all the time, that if it's a crisis to you, it's a crisis to us. And like Tim's saying, it could be a breakup. It could be being a new parent. It could be taking care of your older parent. but it can also be maybe certain mental health symptoms are flaring up or worsening for you. It could be you just need a therapist, don't know where to start, housing, insurance. There's so many things that people come in for and that we really are able to support and help navigate those things.
You recently celebrated your first year of operations. What are the keynote moments or takeaways from that first year?
I think one of the key takeaways is there was this idea that the people that would be coming to us would be known to Howard Center. And the data has shown that a lot of the people that have come here have no association with Howard Center at all. So really just highlighting that this is a service that's been needed. And now that it's here, people are utilizing it. We've met almost 1,000 unique people coming into this space. One of those kind of shocking things was we thought it would be a lot of people known to Howard Center, and we're not seeing that. We're actually seeing the opposite. We're seeing people come from places outside of Chittenden County. And then we're also seeing a lot of college students. And a lot of those college students are also from out of state. So it's not just working in the county in Burlington. It's working outside Chittenden County. It's working outside of Vermont. It's calling people in Massachusetts and Colorado and Utah to say, hey, we're working with one of your students here at UVM. And we've collaborated closely with all the UVM college student support services and working with them to create more of a channel of collaboration. It's just been wonderful. And the partnering has been great, and doubling down on those relationships to really just help the community has been great.
Yeah, I feel like the surprising thing is that there isn't one section of the population that we see. You know, we really see people from all walks of life, from all age ranges, all varying needs. We might have increases at certain times when it's midterms or finals. We're definitely seeing a lot more college students, but we do see such a variety, and we're here for everybody. I think it's a great takeaway and something that we want to make sure people know is that this is genuinely for everybody.
Let's talk about peer support for a second. How important and impactful is it for mental health care and for what you guys do at the center?
I think it's vital. Our peers are fantastic. That idea of talking to somebody with lived experience, somebody that's gone through something that you're experiencing. I think of the early days of AA and having people say, oh, you can understand the path that I've been down. It's great to have some of the clinical knowledge that maybe clinicians have and nurses and doctors, but when you can add that shared life experience, sometimes that's the wall that needed to be broken down. And we have had people come in here that say, you know, I don't want anything clinical. I just want to kind of talk with somebody from peer support. And we have that. So the collaboration that is working, it works wonders. And we have a little bit of something for everyone.
The power of being able to just be with someone who gets it. Almost all of our staff now are trained in intentional peer support, which is what our peer model is based off of. And so even our clinical staff and our care managers are able to utilize those tools that we're learning from the peer staff. But we've really seen it, like Tim said, is just a vital part of our program. And oftentimes we will have guests come in and maybe they do see a clinician, care manager, the nurse, and then they might come back and spend time in peer. And that's been just a really important part of our program. You know, people need space to sit and talk and to just be around people who understand what it is that they're going through.
Gabby's story is remarkable in a lot of ways, but one of the things that stands out to me is the courage it probably took for her to make herself or allow herself to go seek help.
We talk about that here often. It's like when somebody's coming in, like what did it take for them to finally bring themselves in? How low were they or how exhausted? What was that tipping point, right, for them to come in? And it's sometimes when it's 4:30 and somebody walks in, it doesn't matter what time it is. We know it took a lot for you to come here, and we're going to treat your situation just like if you walked in at 9 a.m. when we open. If people are thinking, oh, I don't want to bother them at this hour with my issue, no, please come in. We will meet you where you're at, and we'll try to point in the right direction.
Thank you. It's time for a quick break here on Living Healthy Together. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation about mental health urgent care resources in our region, and you'll learn why you should consider visiting the Howard Center Mental Health Urgent Care Center, even if you're well. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Living Healthy Together, where we're digging into mental health urgent care and the one-year mark of Howard Center's Mental Health Urgent Care Clinic in Burlington. We're joined now by Maureen Leahy, Administrative Director of Psychiatry for UVM Health. Maureen, thanks for joining us. You've been working in leadership roles around neurology and psychiatry for more than two decades. How have mental health needs and challenges across our region changed over the course of your career?
Historically, psychiatry and the services associated with it had been kept really small and lean and tight because psychiatry, mental health services in the world of healthcare finance aren't generally money losers. There's very few programs in psychiatry and mental health that turn a positive margin at the end of the day in isolation, in the looking at the book of business of each of those services. And because of that margin loss, a lot of the areas in psychiatry were deliberately kept small, which resulted in a real big mismatch between supply and demand in this community. It's not different in other areas. This is a national issue. That's really where we came from. In recent years, and I would say the last, 7 to 10 years, there's been a real recognition of the downstream impact on both clinical outcomes and financial outcomes when you do invest in a robust mental health system. So when we're taking care of people's mental health, they're better able to take care or play a part in taking care of their own physical health, which can result in things downstream like a reduction in ED visits or a reduction in inpatient admissions or a reduction in the amount of time somebody's calling their primary care office. And all of those things add up to a financial savings, which offsets a financial loss if you look at the psychiatric service itself.
Given how complex the interactions and relationships between mental and physical health are, is it hard to justify the need, win funding, and make headway here?
Interestingly, in our health system, the Vermont, upstate New York health systems, both with our own entity and our community partners, I haven't had to fight. So there's almost always been a recognition of if we can figure out how to fund this, the rest will follow. The people have been very supportive of providing the services, have been very understanding that the negative margin that psychiatry and psychiatric services generates is not because of poor performance, underproductivity, something I'm doing wrong. It's the nature of how healthcare pays for mental health services. And it's been a real exercise in creativity and business innovation to figure out, we need this thing, how do we fund it? And it's really resulted in some interesting partnerships and some interesting coming together of people and entities that may not have in other circumstances so that we can fund certain endeavors. And the mental health urgent care is a perfect example of it. It's the creation of four partners that came together with different skill sets and abilities to fund different things, and we were able to create something.
It's been more than a year now since Howard Center and that group of partners you mentioned launched the Mental Health Urgent Care Clinic. What went into that project and who was involved?
In the beginning, there were five partners, five entities, and there are four working partners that have gotten us to where we are. The fifth partner or the fifth entity that we started all of this with was the State of Vermont Department of Mental Health. So they were part of the group that helped convene us and bring us together. The other four partners are UVM Health, the Howard Center, Community Health Centers, and Pathways Vermont. Once we got into the project planning and the operational stuff, the Department of Mental Health, I won't say they ever stepped out of it, but they faded into the background a little bit and we pulled them in as we needed to. So those are the five partners. And I've always had good relationships with those organizations, but never as good relationships, working relationships as we do now. And it's not rocket science. It makes everything so much easier when I know who to call, or I know that this organization provides this service, or I'm thinking about doing this thing and I want to bounce it off of somebody. And so it's been a real value add for us.
We're past the 1 year mark now. What's been the experience of you and your department? What are we doing well, and where do things need to continue to grow and develop?
The first year, I think, has been a real success. We've served a lot of people. Some populations we expected, some populations we did not expect, but we've served a lot of people and we have made things better for a lot of people. We acknowledge UVM Health, the Department of Psychiatry, that the emergency department is not actually the best place for a therapeutic experience for a patient in a mental health crisis. We have an amazing psychiatry team in the emergency department. We have psychiatrists in the ED. We have amazing nurses and mental health techs. And at the same time, that space and that environment is just not conducive to a real therapeutic experience for the patient. The mental health urgent care is much better suited for a lot of the people that had been going to the emergency department. It is not for everybody. There are some patients in a mental health crisis who still need to go to the emergency department, and that will always be the case. The successes we've had have been in creating a space that is welcoming for everybody, that is off of the main campus of the hospital, which can oftentimes feel busy, and the emergency department with the lights and noises and all the other stuff going on. It's a much more calming, relaxed environment. People can walk in. You don't need an appointment. You can come multiple days in a row. And you can come for anything. So if you need to connect with a therapist in the community and you've been given the list and you don't know how to work through the list, you can come in and we can work through the list with you. If you have been admitted to a program and the program starts this coming Monday and you're really struggling to get through to Monday, you can come in and either receive therapeutic services or use the peer space that's staffed by Pathways and just come in and be in the space until you start your program on Monday. It's hard to imagine our system before that we had it. I lived it and I remember it, but it's been a real value add to the system. Psychiatry and mental health services are dependent on a continuum of care. So starting with primary care or community mental health care and moving all the way up to the most intense inpatient services. And this really fills a gap in that continuum. With regards to where does it need to grow or go next, there's two big things I think that are needed. And one is more hours. So right now we're a Monday through Friday business hours, 8 to 5-ish operation. We do not have weekend hours and we do not have evening hours. And that to me is a gap in our system. And then the other place where we have a need to grow is ages. Right now we serve 18 and above, and we really should be finding a way to serve children and adolescents. Both of those gaps that I outline, we knew them going in. It's not a surprise. The reason we didn't start out with those initially were partially funding, partially workforce, the ability to find enough people to staff all of that. And then also partially wanting to get something going and working well before we grew it. So we started off with something nice and tight and solid. And now I think we're at a point where we can say, okay, we know how to do this. We know what this is. How do we add on children and adolescents, and how do we add on hours?
Are there strategies to share or things people need to hear about seeking this kind of care if and when they need it?
When somebody is experiencing depression or anxiety for the first time, they often don't know it. There's not a bruise or a bump or a red spot or something, and they look at it and they say, oh, that's depression or anxiety. They wake up not feeling well, and oftentimes they don't know how to categorize the not feeling well. And so primary care providers are an excellent first step in, I don't feel well, let's sort out, is this something medical or something mental health related? Primary care providers, partially because of a lack of mental health services in many communities, are excellent at that first level of mental health intervention. And then there's a stigma around mental health care, and we're trying to work through that, find ways to work around that. But people need to start to see their mental health the same way they see every other bit of their health. If you've got strep throat and your throat feels terrible and you don't feel well, you go to your primary care doctor and you get a prescription. And if you wake up feeling the set of symptoms that would be described as depression or anxiety, same thing. You've got to go to your primary care doctor and start figuring out, is this something that can be handled in primary care, or does it need to escalate to a higher level of care? Now, the mental health urgent care, it's a place that we encourage people to visit when they're well so that they know about the resource when they're not well. And so if you go into the mental health urgent care and you think you need their services and it turns out you don't, that's okay. I would err on the side of go in, check it out when you're feeling well. I don't know how to combat denial. You know, denial is a hard one. I live it myself at times. But I do think the more we talk about it, and there's a lot more talk these days about people having postpartum depression or depression in college or depression in various stages of life. And I think the more we can talk about it and normalize it, the more people might think of it more front of mind when they're not feeling well.
What are some investments that should be made in mental health urgent care that would be impactful over the next 5 to 10 years?
In the realm of child and adolescent services, we have some gaps in that continuum that I mentioned, and not complete gaps, but not enough services. So one of the areas that we could use more services are what are called IOPs, or intensive outpatient programs. And they're like a step down unit from an inpatient stay. So you have an inpatient stay somewhere, and then an IOP, or an intensive outpatient program, is several days a week of care. And then maybe you step down to an outpatient psychiatrist. So we could use more child and adolescent IOPs in the area. Vermont currently has only one place in the state for child inpatient services, and that's Brattleboro, which geographically is certainly not centrally located. So that can be quite a burden for families. And so more of that would be helpful. The biggest bang for our buck, for lack of a better way of saying it, is investing in services to augment primary care. So we have put it currently in Vermont, we're working on New York. We have a psychiatrist and a social worker or mental health clinician in every primary care clinic in the UVM health system. And that has allowed us to shore up those primary care doctors and to really help take care of a lot of need in the lowest level of care possible. So we want to take care of people and their mental health needs before they escalate to a point of needing to go to the emergency department. And if we can invest in shoring up primary care that way, that is really where we've seen a really big impact.
That's all the time we have today on Living Healthy Together. Thanks to all our guests for being with us and sharing their stories and insights. If you're out there listening and have a question, comment, or idea for a future episode, email us at healthtalk@uvmhealth.org. Living Healthy Together is also available as a podcast. If you're interested in checking out some of our past episodes, look us up wherever you listen to podcasts. Be sure to follow, subscribe, and consider giving us that 5-star rating, which really helps a lot. I'm your host, Philip Rao. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.